88.1 Sikelen. Mamete 88.1 Sikelen. Ulalele 88.1.
I'm not risking my life. I'm not fighting 14, 15, some days 18 hours a day, some days 24 hours a day against the globalists because I think I'm going to lose. These people are dangerous killers. They run the planet. They do whatever they want. But history shows tyrants always reach too far. I wouldn't be fighting them and risking my life if I didn't know they could be beaten. I know they can be beaten. I know they will be beaten. And if you listen to my show 10 years ago, it was a lot more negative than it is now. I said, if we don't wake people up, if we don't educate people about the true architecture of world government, if we don't educate them as the controlled banking collapse comes. We have the IMF and World Bank documents. We know what they've done in every other country. We know what they've done in England in 1815 with the Rothschilds. If we don't do this, and if we don't educate the military and police that they're expendable and being used and brainwashed, then these people are going to win. But I started waging war 16 years ago against the tyranny, 14 years ago on air, Red Beckman back in the early 1950s, and it takes time. And that's the number one message. Now, going back to Red Beckman and then your phone calls and a lot of other issues, Red, I was asking you the question of the enemy's counter operations. I mean, I am shocked by how out in the open they are now. I guess that's hubris or false arrogance or a face they're putting on because their internal documents from Cass Sunstein, the Congress, the UN, stuff they don't widely publicize but that is publicly available, they say they're in deep danger. They are freaking out saying we've got to go with shutting down web, arresting people that criticize government. We've got to go to a hot tyranny, not a cold incremental tyranny, which is good because the cold incremental tyranny is hard to beat. Because it sneaks around, like Cicero said, inside your gates. I like it that they're coming right out in the open. And so why do you think they're openly announcing world government? Why do you think they're openly shifting from denying all this to admitting it, but putting their spin on it? And how do you see them counter-striking?
Well, you know, I think that so much of this is the spin masters, of course, they're just paid. These are people that are paid to come up with all this stuff. I think that they're in a state of terror. They're looking for a place to hide. You know, everything is going backwards for them. They're not getting the job done. They're not getting the guns. They're not going to get the guns. I mean, they might get what comes out the end of the barrel of the gun, but they're not going to get the gun itself. And I think that, you know, 9-1-1, they were able to, you know, fool the American people initially into thinking it was those foreigners, those aliens, that had pulled this off, taking control of those planes and flying into the World Trade Center. How many Americans today are there that still believe that? Very, very, very few. And what we have is we've got hundreds of people all over this nation that are trying to put the pieces together. They're collecting the evidence. And I would dare say that there's some people out there that pull that off. They're right here in this country. They've got an escape hatch. They'll fly to some other country or something when it gets too hot, but they're still here. But I would dare say they kind of rub their necks once in a while, and I wonder if they kind of feel that rope settling around their neck. Because If they take do another dirty trick like they did 9-1-1, I'll tell you, there's going to be some people that are going to get rounded up, and they're going to be prosecuted for treason and the whole works, and they're going to end up hanging from a gallows someplace, because the American people are not going to sit still for any more of their false flags. It's not going to happen. And I think that what we've got going on in Iraq and Afghanistan right now, I think that the military, they're doing some thinking on their own. They're not depending on Obama to give them a sense of direction. The underwear bomber, this proves what I'm saying, that people are now very much alert. When something like this happens, they are immediately right in there getting the clues. And it didn't take them long to unravel it, did it?
No.
I mean, they unraveled it, and it's an embarrassment to the establishment to find out that, you know, us people out here, we can unravel their schemes. They're conspiracies. That's what it is. They call us conspirators. They are the conspiracy.
We now have their handbook.
Absolutely. It's just it's a new ball game from what it was 5 years ago.
It's a game changer.
Absolutely. It's just absolutely amazing. And a thrill. A real thrill for me.
But just because we've got the ball doesn't mean we've won the game.
That's true, but we're going to win it. And by now, if they don't know we're going to win it, they're not near as smart as they thought they were.
Well, Red, I've never heard you this positive. You're really excited.
Well, I just, you know, I'm on the phone a great deal talking to people all over this country. And I just get such a fantastic response. My books are, you know, I wrote Born Again Republic in 1980, the fall of 1980. That book is still in print. And of course, my last book, Why the Militia? Boy, I'll tell you, it's people read that and they say, there is a primer that every patriot needs to read. And of course, Walls in Our Minds, it'll go on forever. And I joke about it and I say, I'm 81, but and I'm not going to last forever, but I'm going to kick butt after I'm gone.
That's the great part about it, isn't it?
Yes,
once you've
absolutely.
Told the truth, once you've told the truth, it always stands.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's, you know, it is such a, an exciting thing when you talk to people that in the past they wouldn't listen to you, they wouldn't pay attention to you. Now they're coming and saying, hey, you told us that this was going to happen and we didn't believe you, but it's here.
Well, that's the other big one. I want to come back and talk to you about that and then get into some other issues and take calls. Red Beckman joining us is that you didn't just get it partly right. Ron Paul didn't just get it partly right. I didn't just get it partly right. I mean, because we saw what the same group of crooks did all over the world in different countries, we told people exactly what they were going to do, and the power of it then coming true, it's amazing. The final illusion to fall is that we're the minority. No, we are the majority. I mean, I've even got yuppie neighbors that were laughing at me 2 years ago. They're not laughing now. They're saying, what do I do? Because the world government's been openly announced. We'll be right back.
I mean, my sense is that in the last 20 years, actually, the typical household in the U.S., the median household, as they call it, has not made any progress. But who's made progress are, of course, as you said, the thieves on Wall Street. They have made a lot of progress, and government employees.
Well, that's the issue, is that government is exploding in size. Obama has spent more money in 1 year than all presidents before him combined. They're just hiring more police, more bureaucrats. That's the only sector that's growing. And they're now saying they're going to continue the spending and that they're going to raise taxes. And they are raising taxes at every level, state, federal, local, international. And that we see many UN chiefs and others saying, look, we want to end the industrialized world. Government says we're consuming too much, so they're doing us a favor, clamping down on the economy. And this is actually being done by design, many experts believe. What's your take on that?
Well, basically, I think that Mr. Obama is right to hire a lot of policemen, because if I were such a bad president, I would also need increasing protection. But in general, I think that his administration is a complete failure in terms of economic and foreign policies. Nothing has been addressed overseas. He has increased the engagement in Afghanistan, and I can assure you that Afghanistan is a country where nobody has an interest that the U.S. will win a conflict. Neither the Chinese, nor the Indians, nor the Pakistanis, nor the Russians, nor the mercenaries who are hired in Pakistan. So it will never end, and it will be a bottomless pit. And in terms of domestic policies, the health care reform is another disaster because it creates uncertainty. So let's assume you have a business. You employ 50 people. You don't know what your tax rate will be 3 years from now. You don't know what your health care bill will be 3 years from now. About the last thing you will do is hire people. So I think that the uncertainty he has created is very, very bad for the economy in the long run.
CKLN listeners, this is your host BK, aka Vlad Krishna, for the 22nd day of February 2010. We start off the show with some clips of 81-year-old Red Beckman on the Alex Jones Radio Show from February 4th, 2010, where he says the New World Order is scared. They're running scared, folks. That means, in a nutshell, after studying this for, say, 50 years or so since the 1950s, 81-year-old Red Beckman is convinced that their aggression these days is a show of bravado meant to intimidate us. And I was also just listening to a clip of the Alex Jones Radio Show from the 19th of February, Friday, with James Traficant, former Congressman James Traficant. And this gentleman was railroaded by the U.S. justice system for reversing the burden of proof in the IRS tax code. To keep it in a nutshell, before, the burden of proof was on you to prove you were innocent if the government called you guilty, as opposed to the burden of proof being on the government to prove that you're guilty. And what he did was he said, no, this is crazy. And through legislation, he reversed that. He reversed it to say the government can't call you guilty and you have to prove yourself innocent. The government has to prove you're guilty if they want to fine you or incarcerate you. Now, in the first year after that, there was a study done, and it went from like 3 million wage garnishings down to 500,000. Went from 3 million fines down to 500,000. Went from 1.5 million wage garnishings down to like 160,000. And went from 10,000 homes taken by the IRS down to 57. So you can see that, you know, when the state wants to, it will charge you and it will harass you unfairly, as those stats prove. So definitely check out archive.org if you'd like to look for the interview with James Traficant. It's fascinating stuff. When you get a whistleblower who spent several years in prison, in a nutshell, they had 6 years of investigation, a $50 million investigation, but no video or audio of Mr. Traficant and no evidence of any crime, just 7 witnesses that were pressured to testify against him. And then at that point, 4 of them have since, so he went to jail. But 4 of them have since recanted. Another man in Nigeria testified to he went back to Nigeria after he was in the States. He testified in Nigeria officially, just to get it on record, that his life was ruined because of the Congressman James Traficant case. So keep in mind the oppressive power of the state out there when it comes to these issues. As Alex Jones said on his own radio show on the 19th of February, 2010, he says when the state can punish congressmen and governors, Governor Rod Blagojevich, Governor Elliot Spitzer, you know, when they can just take these people and trash them. TDC candidate Adam Giambrone, who's still being periodically savaged in the papers, in particular by the Toronto Star, which I find very interesting. A liberal paper who one would think would be sympathetic to Mr. Giambrone's populism. But again, former mayor candidate Giambrone, another guy taken down hard by the media. So understand their role in all of this is to manage public opinion. And that includes public opinion of individuals in our society in such a way as to convince us to distrust some people that might be in our favor and to trust some people that are not working in our best interest. So it's out there. With respect to this, I'd like to go over a little anecdote that happened on Saturday. And here on the 22nd of February, 2010, as you're listening to Rood Awakening on CKLN Radio, CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, Rogers Cable Box 947, and streaming or downloadable at archive.org or radioforall.net. Just search blackkrishna.blogspot.com for the link, or go to Radio for All or Archive and do a search for the day show that you're looking for. And email me, blackkrishna, B-L-A-C-K-K-R-I-S-H-N-A, at gmail.com if you have any questions, answers, or suggestions, songs you want me to play, little clips of stuff you want to say. I'm opening to reviewing some of that stuff and possibly playing it here on the show on Rood Awakening Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. But what happened on Saturday was that I got together with my colleagues at TorontoTruthSeekers.com, and we had a reasonably successful street action on Saturday at Yonge and Dundas. Still a little cold for us to stand there, a little cold for people to slow down, chat, or take stuff. But then again, people are getting more interested in taking stuff. It was surprising to see the uptake at times. One of my colleagues as well, Michael, burned 35 DVDs, and he did this back in the 60s against the Vietnam War, handing out handbills and so on. And within an hour, he gave out 35, and then he left, and that was it. He's older now, and he's like, yeah, this is me for today. And I was like, all right, beautiful, man. I mean, we'll see you later. And he's gonna do it again because there are you know, I kind of push myself in this because you know. Once you know you can do something, that kind of settles things. So, you know, there's that. But that's me as an individual. But as individuals in our culture at this time in history, it is worth seeing if you can push yourself a little bit to get something done to guarantee that you have a future worth looking forward to. So Saturday, some of our colleagues got together handing out Climate Gate flyers, detox from vaccines. Climate Gate, by the way, was the scandal that exposed the fraud that is climate change and or global warming being caused by man. Some emails from East Anglia University, the Climate Research Institute the United Nations uses. The main one behind this, emails were leaked or hacked and released, and the point is that showed they lie, and they lie for money, and they lie because money tells them to, and so on. So that's the science behind worrying about what's going to happen in 20 years instead of worrying about what's happening right now. But right now, we were on the streets on Saturday at Yonge and Dundas, as usual, as we have been for most of the last 6-7 months, since basically July of 2009. And there's been a bit of an erosion of our free speech rights. And I've been warning about this for years, and it's not me. I don't have a crystal ball. I've been getting information from a variety of sources and individuals and doing my own sort of analysis of information I've come across, or just simply the world and environment I live in. And I'm kind of like, yeah, we are losing our rights. You just have to see the little black bug-eyed camera eyeballs all over the TDC buses and streetcars and subways for your evidence. And so we used to have a table and a truth umbrella, and it was a decent sized little table. He's the size Truth Barella with some bannerage. Worked great, looks great in videos. You can just go to YouTube and type Toronto Truth Seekers, and there's a whole bunch of stuff up there. But the province of Ontario cracked down on the city. Basically, they were in charge. It was one provincial guy and four city guys kind of hanging back. And there was some sort of crackdown where we need a busker permit. So I had a busker permit, so no problem. I need to be busking. So when this was all going on, they said, yeah, start doing something. So I started freestyle rapping. Some of the guys got into it. And we bought a little ghetto blaster. And we were just like, whatever we have to do to stand here and hand out information about the risks of vaccines, the dangers of aspartame, fluoride, about the danger of the New World Order, global central banking cartel, a borderless, basically pirate crew of rich people worldwide working together to strip Mother Earth of its resources and control its people, and quite probably, based on everything that's going on, kill a bunch of us off. So, you know, so we're handing out information like that, but and we heard about the Olympic celebrations at Nathan Phillips Square, so we decided to trek down there, and this is where things got interesting. We were just on the right near Bay and Queen, actually in the sort of southeast corner of Nathan Phillips Square, sort of facing City Hall, and so we decided to stand there and on the sidewalk and hand out some flyers. Approached by the Olympic organizer people, volunteer people or whatever. Then approached by security. Then I was physically let off because I said, you know, what's the law that says we can't stand here? How did this public sidewalk? That part, the event, I get. You don't want us walking in there and jumping in front of the Bell Olympic 2010 signs and ruining everyone's good time. No problem. We're not. I'm not personally about that either, but on a public sidewalk in this country, can you hand another Canadian a piece of paper? Well, the answer is no. And I'm talking about a progressive crackdown on free speech, from losing the table in Truth Barella to now being allowed to have, at best, a truth buggy. And all of us did. We kind of, the whole black guy, the whole city got stripped, according to the province guy. We're going to try and bring that back, though, and we're going to see if that's a temporary thing or if that's a permanent thing, because it just makes no sense. But, so back to Nathan Phillips Square, back to Toronto City Hall. Right after I was escorted off the property, basically escorted right off the southwest corner onto the road, and there's a little island there with a bus shelter. This is, again, Bay and Queen. Just you know, one half a block west of the Eaton Center. And basically Toronto City Hall, just near Nathan Phillips Square. And just as I was being escorted off, a police car, one of the semi-disguised ones, you know, the kind of blue, you can't see the decals, but you kind of can see the decals because it's semi-translucent, and you kind of know it's a cop car, but, you know, for a second you can forget. But he pulls up right in front of me. And I was like, oh, well, this is convenient. That guy just led me off by the arm. I didn't resist. But, you know, if a guy leads you off by the arm, and you consider resisting, you kind of think, well, if he's getting that physical, where is it going to go next? So basically it was a, you know, but I nothing personal against the guy. Guy seems like a nice guy. I'm not going to identify anybody in this conversation, just because I don't think it's important right now. And a lot of this is on film. We're deciding what to do with that. But the point is that I was let off, and then I asked this officer to help me with a possible assault charge. And so the guy says, you know, sure. And, you know, he could tell that I wasn't panicked and I wasn't physically injured. So, you know, he just casually chilled out, pulled around the corner, you know, hopped up on the curb. Security guy was like, you got to get off the curb. I was like, hey, man, you just let the officer here settle this. So we're both stating our case. And I have to admit, you know, I was being, you know, pretty normal. And the officer was being very nice, very reasonable. He was basically going to let both of us blow off steam for a bit and then go our separate ways. And that's pretty much what would have happened, I think, because I would have gotten the same answer same time. So I was saying, what's the law? I want to cite this law. I want to challenge this law. And I want to know, you know, if this law doesn't, you know, override the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, then you don't have to enforce it. And it's probably an illegal law. I just don't have to go through all the rigmarole of challenging it. It's just not legal to do that. And I don't mind, you know, people renting the square and Toronto City Hall corporate security, because again, we are corporations. Cities worldwide are corporations under more or less something known as British Admiralty Law, where Admiralty Law supersedes, you know, all laws on Earth, except maybe the Law of the Seas Treaty. It gets kind of complicated up the top there, but these are the sort of ancient laws that our modern laws are based on. When I mean ancient, I mean a couple hundred years ago, but ancient in today's modern Twitter culture. So I'm standing there talking with the officer and a couple of colleagues of mine and the security guy, and into the conversation comes another two police officers. One of them makes his way right towards me, and this was a guy taller than me, older gentleman, maybe 50s, salt and pepper mustache, glasses, just right in my face, you know, seeing if I have a problem, this and that. And his other guy, a young brown dude with cool facial hair, good-looking dude, he hung back a little bit. And, yeah, initially, I don't think he was necessarily into intimidating us like that, based on the fact that we're, you know, not there for a bad purpose. Like, we clearly weren't trying to do anything criminal. We were just trying to see what our free speech rights were there, see if there had been any changes to them, and see if there was a way that we could fight to secure them. Not right there. It's not like we were chaining ourselves to, you know, light poles around and stuff like that. We were just asking what the law was that said that they could confiscate this public part of the sidewalk as opposed to just the sort of formal, you know, square area and adjoining areas. And so, but this guy's right in my face, and he's saying, "Do you have a license to film here? Don't you know you need a license to film here? Those are corporate logos." And I'm thinking, geez, there's, you know, 1,000 people in there with cameras, and there's going to be pictures all over Facebook tomorrow. Better break out the paddy wagons. But you don't say stuff like that forcefully when a guy's right in your face, and I'm pretty calm about the whole thing, and but at the same time, you know, as a man-to-man kind of thing, it is the type of thing that, you know, that can only go on for so long before, you know, one of you snaps. And so I didn't want that to happen. I didn't want that to be me. But definitely getting in a guy's face, and a cop can do it to you. And you know where we live. You're not going to pull anything too crazy. So that went on for a bit. Asked us, you know, if we have a permit to film here. Don't we need a permit? I said, you know, obviously we've been on the streets for 6 months doing stuff like this. And he says, you know, because you've been doing it for 6 months, you know, do you think it's legal? And I just don't know how to answer these things. Not that I could much, because my answers are quickly cut off. And he asked for my ID. I said I didn't have any. And I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. So I didn't think that, you know, he'd have to take me in. I didn't think I was doing anything wrong at the time. I didn't think I was going to be suspected of doing anything wrong. I think I was just asking questions to clarify the legal basis for asking myself and or my friends to leave the foot of our city hall on what I thought was a public sidewalk based on the basic architecture of the area. And so, that went on for a bit. And other people were there, and he's like, "Don't you know you're causing this crowd?" And I'm like, "That's not my crowd. There's another crowd of people there. Like, we're not, you know, we don't cause crowds. We basically got to walk by things. Sometimes we do, you know, in fairness, there are conversations to start up. But basically, our thing is, you know, there you go, ma'am, there you go, sir, or thank you, and handing out little pieces of paper, depending on how you like to do it. And just saying, here you go. And in transit, you had the opportunity to pick up a lot of things today, a lot of information. You can pick up stuff that you buy. You can pick up stuff to eat. And you had a chance to get a little nugget of truth crack to addict you to the idea that learning it is a good idea. Or at least learning what your fellow Canadians think is the truth and then evaluating that for yourself. You know, it's not, it's only fair to say that, oh, really? You know, you guys are up to this and you guys are doing this. So wagwan. So wagwan. What are you finding out? So back to Nathan Phillips Square. Guy says, you know, get out of here. You can film me all you want. I'm a public figure. You can't film him, a security guard. If I see your, him on film, on YouTube, anywhere, I'm coming after you. I'm like, all right. So I walk away at that point. And then a couple other guys being questioned and so on. We walk to the island. And the island is, I mean, we cross the road. And we get to the island with this little, I think there's a little bus shelter there. And this is, again, right at the corner of Bay and Queen, right at the corner of Old City Hall and New City Hall. And then the officers followed us there. And this time the younger guy comes to me, and he says, all right, I'm going to need your name anyway if you don't have ID or whatever. I was like, ah, no, I don't have my, you know, ID. And the idea is that they followed us there, and they questioned us there, and their ID is indeed us there. And it's possible, you know, as I've been told, it's possible that this is an act of forcible confinement where, you know, once someone's left, if you're in charge of security for an area, once they leave that area, you can't go off that area and confine them and stop them. And if you're security, you can stop someone just by saying stop and be in security. And, you know, I don't know, and this is up at Youngin College. You know, I was just there. We were after a long day of this stuff. Still not finished the story, but after a long day of this stuff, we were up there and just noticed how in that mall, the mall cops look like Delta Force. And it's pretty trippy. I mean, when you see it, when you see their pant legs tied together, when you see the flak jacket type vest they have on, you know, it looks like they're the combat boots, and they wear black uniforms. The police, in fairness, yeah, okay, there's a bluish tinge to the black, but they're almost black uniforms. But the security guards, they wear jet black uniforms, and again, they look like Delta Force. They look like stormtroopers. Now they're not armed with that stuff yet, but they certainly look like they could be, very comfortably, and that's a troublesome sign. So back to the island, Bay and Queen. We're being questioned a bit. You know, I said to the officer, he's like, you were filming. I have to get your stuff. I have to get your name. I'm like, I wasn't filming. And it's a tricky situation. These situations, a lot of pressure on you. You're thinking, you know, am I going to jail? You know, what's going to happen? You know, what type of straight legalistic hell can they put an individual through for, you know, asking questions of their rights in public in their city? And so eventually I said, okay, you know, I'm the guy left me alone, and I walked away. Did question a couple other guys, and that went down. I don't think anything will come of it. I don't, from their end, from our end, who knows? There are options. There are certainly legal options to consider pursuing. But you know, the bottom line is that this is a situation that's not about any individual. It's a situation that's about a system. You know, we could be anybody. You could be anybody. The cops could be anybody. The security could be anybody. And nobody wants to act in such a fashion, or almost nobody. Or even if an individual does, they certainly don't have license to engineer society this way. But nobody wants to act like a jerk in such a fashion as to alter their society into one where that becomes more normalized, and it eventually bounces back and jerks you around. So we cross the street again, and this time we're sort of at the southwest corner of Old City Hall, and we're just sort of filming what's happening, and then some of our colleagues join us, and then we take off from there. But that was our little adventure on Saturday. As group of Toronto truth seekers trying to share a little truth, little information, maybe some vaccine ingredients. Read a can of soup before you buy it, and to see what's in it, how much sodium, potassium, MSG, fat content, calories, among other products, before you put it in your body. Definitely do the same with vaccines. And we aren't allowed to do that in public, and we aren't allowed to film in public, and who knows what we'll be allowed to say in public. And I noticed there's, you know, and other friends have brought this up, a standardization in uniform out there. The jackets, I think they're Grey Goose or Triple Goose, Grey Goose, something like that. Grey Goose is vodka. Might be Triple Goose. And they're all sort of one color, and then a little patch on the arm. And they just sort of sprung up everywhere this winter. And everybody has one. And they seem nice, and it's nothing against anybody having one. I got stuff that everyone has. Here in Communist Canada, I love blue jeans. I am currently wearing a lovely pair of blue jeans. And so, you know, yeah, what are you gonna, but again, these are memes introduced in our society. And so when everybody's doing it, why make it personal? There's just no reason to. So anyway, that was some adventures from Toronto Truth Seekers on Saturday. I had to relay that because it is a real-time anecdote. As a journalist, and as someone who can be an investigative journalist, I simply don't have the time to investigate as often as I'd like. So when I'm in the middle of something worth investigating, you know, I try and analyze it and figure out what's going on. But again, TorontoTruthSeekers.com is where you can find more of our exploits, up to 315 members. We're at 200 about 6 months ago, so our numbers are increasing. Lots of great flyers in the files section. Again, you can do this. I'm not trying to... I didn't say that story today to intimidate anybody. In fact, thanks to everyone involved for the way it went and turned out, because it's an incredible learning experience. It reveals where we are in 2010, in February, when the Olympics in Vancouver is a veritable police state, and yet 200 anarchists can run through the streets smashing things and breaking things and then being, quote, dispersed by the police, according to an article in the Metro I read the other day. So 200 anarchists can run through the streets smashing and breaking things. We hand out a couple of flyers outside our city hall here in Toronto, and we get immediately, and aggressively, well, no, we get aggressively questioned. Immediately was another part of the story. But the bottom line is that we do have flyers up there, and it's quite simple, folks. Show people that your opinion is more important than just saying it, just being something you picked up at the media and fancy going a few rounds for. Like, yeah, I read this and made sense to me, and I'm smart, so screw you, let's go. You know, and so on. I mean, anybody can do that. But if you formalize your opinion in some way with, you know, blog, you know, or flyers in particular. Why do I like flyers? Because they're permanent. Because people can take them with them. They can fold them up in their pockets. They're physical. And the online cyber culture is often very disposable. Even, I'm staring here at Infowars.com. They have a flickering, you know, rotating Web 2.0 window. With Alex Jones, with various information stories floating, and it's all just a stream. It's a flotsam and jetsam of information. Iran attack. It's about mass murder, not nukes. James Traficant on Alex Jones TV. AIPAC, the American Israeli Policy Association Committee or something, runs America's foreign policy. George Soros, Greece's financial crisis and the myth of modern America. So yeah, Greece is getting taken down hard. The birthplace of democracy. Bomb Iran drumbeat picks up pace. I'm just reading this window here, flickering at Infowars.com. Did Rick Perry's Clear Channel connection sink Deborah Medina? So Rick Perry's current governor of Texas, Deborah Medina, an independent anti-New World Order challenger, and the current governor might be pulling some sneaky strings. Before Operation Northwoods, government leaders suggested false flag in the Dominican Republic. More declassified instances of U.S. government attempting or thinking of staging false flag terror. Joe Stacks, 9/11, NSA and Homeland Security related issues. Joe Stacks, the guy who flew his plane into an IRS building in Austin, Texas. And not sure if that's a false flag operation or just a disgruntled guy going at the system. Still investigating that. But what does all this mean? And what are we all supposed to make of it? And how are we supposed to decide on what's important? Well, we got to go simple. And if it's too simple, people don't like it because they say, it's too simple. And if it's too complicated, people don't like it because they say, that's too complicated. So, you know, what do you... should you make it just complicated enough? Well, just complicated enough is simple with a simple and a complicated explanation, depending on what someone prefers. So if you want to go toe-to-toe, we can go Flyerology 101. And I can break down 25 reasons why you should make a flyer. Or I can break down two. And those two are compelling enough at this time in history for one to do that. And not just print out ones you find or burn DVDs, but actually put some of your creativity, your editorial intentions into that. Because it'll force you to be honest, and it'll force you to be real, and it'll force you to be creative, and it'll force you to feel you have a personal stake in this, and it'll force you to think your voice is worth something, and these are all good things. And at this time in history, it you know, people want to feel good, fine. Do something worth feeling good about. And so on. So you can do that, and we've proven, and people have proven over the years, in 4 years, for centuries actually, that this is an effective way to communicate. It's a real way to communicate. And today's Twitter era where everyone's texting, you know, I'm at a coffee house, higher end coffee chain. I'll leave it that way just to, again, protect the anonymity of people involved. But I'm at a higher end coffee chain. And I first asked the young lady, I said, what are you noticing about people? You know, better, worse moods, blah, blah, blah. And at first she was very diplomatic, polite, because, well, it's, you're supposed to be. And I'm a customer. She doesn't know me well. She's seen me a couple of times, seen me a few times and said hello, but doesn't know me well. And politeness, though, is an enemy of truth. But we all use it. We all have to. I mean, but POL, political, politically correct, polite, you know, it's all the same thing. Like, it's a way of PRing your speech. So first she said, well, you know, there are happy people, you know, that are always, you know, happy to see you. And there are people that are, you know, upset. They just haven't had their coffee yet. So, you know, that's basically how it breaks down. I told her, I just said, look, I know there's both types of people. You know, I was asking for percentage decreases. I talked to a woman who drove a TTC bus, and she said in the last 20 years that she's seen people getting more rude, bumping into each other, being less concerned about each other, less friendly and polite to her and other drivers. And she thought that, you know, problematic in the general sense. Though, of course, you know, what one does about that is, a big burden to assume or to get anyone else to assume that you're taking on. So, and so I did, and through the course of this conversation, I did squeeze out something interesting. And again, this woman's a lovely young lady, and I do thank her because I knew she was intelligent and observant. I could just tell that. And so I got, you know, something interesting as an artist, as a journalist, as a human being who likes interesting stuff. And she said that she's noticing, and she's possibly connecting it to the use of communications, text messaging, and so on. People's heads bowed all the time. Bad idea, folks, to walk around with your head bowed or sit around with your head bowed all the time. Bad for your mood. But she's noticing that people are having more difficulty making eye contact and keeping eye contact when you talk to them. And, you know, it used to be a normal thing, and you'd make that connection, and you'd have those regular connections, that little spark of electricity, human being to human being, soul to soul, with eye contact. And yet that is increasingly missing now from conversations. And I find myself doing the same thing. I react very quick, and I'm a fairly quick thinker, and so sometimes I'll react before somebody else does to an assumption of class status or body language or intention. And I might get that wrong a couple of times. Like, you might want to smile at me, and I might see you looking at me, and I might just nod at you, and then you don't get to smile at me, or something like that. And millions of these little interactions happen all over the place. But again, this is a result of scientific and social indoctrination by the New World Order. Not a catch-all term, but a very specific plan and a very specific series of steps and a very specific series of institutions that manage the culture we live in and manage the environments where all the rest of our institutions fit in. So if you're in the music biz and you've been watching Much Music for years and you want to be on Much Music, well, there is a path towards that that's controlled, and you're welcome to it. And right now we're listening to instrumentals from the album Before the Riots by producer Lucid Knights, soon to be featuring vocals from singer Black Krishna, your erstwhile radio host here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, Rogers Cable Box 947, and streaming or downloading at archive.org or radioforall.net. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays is when I do host this show. But I'm going to lay some vocals on these tracks. I have been sitting with these tracks for about a year, formulating, actually thought of the vocals a year ago and just kind of said, I wonder if these things are timeless. And here we are. And we'll see. So, but the point is that there's different categories of information. And this isn't to belittle anyone's individual achievements. I mean, even Jay-Z, the alleged Luciferian worshipping Masonic rapper himself, who shows a lot of evidence of it, you know, he's hustling within the system. You know, my man the other day, we were arguing about Jay-Z. How do you still listen to Jay-Z? He's a Mason. I'm like, well, all the U.S. founding fathers were Masons, and most of your favorite artists were Masons. I'm not supposed to listen to this guy, and he's the best rapper in the world, and I rap, and he's not the best. Eminem might be better, but it's up there. He's one of the top five right now, I guess. And he makes damn good music, and he says damn good things. You know, these people are everyone's a hustler in the New World Order system. My man said, how can you say Jay-Z's a hustler? You know, he's rich. I'm like, listen, Rothschild's rich. If you're getting Rothschild's money, you're a hustler. If you get Rockefeller's money, you're a hustler. Like, you're in the game doing what you need to advance as a black rapper from Marcy Projects who, you know, maybe joined the dark side, whatever, you know, however you define the shadowy cabal that's behind the scenes of our culture. Maybe he didn't. But you know, if he did, you know, that's his thing. Not forgiving it, not excusing it, definitely exposing it, definitely explaining it. And I'm explaining it, I'm trying to anyway, in a way that we can live with. So that you understand everything. You don't have to be scared of information. You don't have to be scared of what people have to say. And so on. So that's, you know, that there are things in our culture that we need to make peace with. And understand and deconstruct to kind of roto-rooter the New World Order influence out. And just by avoiding them or just by avoiding the people that like them, you know, the revolution will not take the Xbox out of your hands. We like it too much. And even though it is a military-industrial complex training tool and it is raising the next generation of soldiers, we just have to give kids who want to be soldiers something to soldier for besides new, illegal, immoral, and genocidal wars, like the current ones in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, countries worldwide, and soon to possibly be intensifying in Iran. It says here, U.S. will start World War III by attacking Iran. This is again on Infowars.com. This is worth a look. And this is Russia Today. A UN nuclear watchdog report suggests Iran can be developing a nuclear bomb, apparently confirming long-held suspicions in the West. But Tehran denies the claims, again insisting that its atomic intentions are peaceful. Michelle Shostakovsky, who's from an independent Canadian policy research group, that's globalresearch.ca, believes that what Iran says hardly matters because the U.S. is planning for war. And there was, and I've been warning about the an attack on Iran since 2005 or 6 or something, and so, you know, and because they keep trying. They keep putting all this info out. And a few years ago, Iran, in fact, I'm going to source this right now. Let's see here. I'm going to type in Iran 10 years away from bomb. And here you go. WashingtonPost.com. All right. So I sent this out as part of a bunch of e-blasts about four and a half years ago, you could say right now. Iran is judged 10 years from nuclear bomb. U.S. intelligence review contrasts with administration statements by Daphna Linzer, Washington Post staff writer, Tuesday, August 2nd, 2005. A major U.S. intelligence review has projected that Iran is about a decade away from manufacturing the key ingredient for a nuclear weapon, roughly doubling the previous estimate of 5 years, according to government sources with first-hand knowledge of the new analysis. The carefully hedged assessment, which represents consensus among U.S. intelligence agencies, contrasts with forceful public statements by the White House. Administration officials have asserted, but have not offered proof, that Tehran is moving determinedly towards a nuclear arsenal. The new estimate could provide more time for diplomacy with Iran over its nuclear ambitions. President Bush has said that he wants the crisis resolved diplomatically, but that, quote, All options are on the table. Chat plus songe, chat plus même chose, as the French might say, although not that poorly. The more things change, the more they remain the same. Barack H. Bush 3, same star, new drama, coming for your guns. Better get some armor. As I said in the song, they coming for your guns. That's right, Barack H. Bush 3, new star, same drama. And we are dealing with the same drama about a possible attack on Iran nigh 5 years later. Despite the fact that a consensus, it says here, the new national intelligence estimate includes what the intelligence community views as credible indicators that Iran's military is conducting clandestine work. But the sources said there is no information linking those projects directly to a nuclear weapons program. What is clear is that Iran, mostly through its energy program, is acquiring and mastering technology that could be diverted into bomb making. Yeah, next time you buy a bag of fertilizer, folks, keep in mind you may be entered into a terror database because that could be used for bomb making. So here we are in the Matrix, still worrying about World War III being started by attacking Iran 5 years later, and 5 years, almost 5 years after a consensus of the 15 or 18 or so U.S. intelligence agencies admitted UN was at least 10 years away from being able to make a nuclear weapon, which would give us till 2015 at least. Although, you know, let's just say that our leaders say we have to do these things. We have to attack these countries. You know, we've got to send the military down to Haiti to, you know, quarantine areas. We've got to confiscate guns in New Orleans. Uh-oh. It's getting hot, folks. It's getting close to home. Let's just say that we our leaders say they need to do these things. Why do we accept that? You know, I mean, what would we do if we were in charge? And I remember a few years ago, I was at my suburban control group homeboy's house out at the cottage out in Pickering, and just chilling out there, clocking some mainstream, and we're watching TV, and there's some politicians on there, and we're kind of talking a bit, and you know, whatever, bring them up, and I asked my homeboys there, I said, would you want any of these guys to come through and just kick it with us right now? Would you want, just pick any of those guys. There's like 5, 6 guys on TV, all them politicians, all rich and powerful and smart and successful and accomplished. Would you want any of these people, any of these civil servants doing such a great job for us to come just kick it with us and have a beer and watch some TV? And they all said no. Hell no. So, and this isn't about fake populism, it's about real populism. So, you know, let's see if we can hold these people to a higher standard. What would you do if you were in office? Would you find a way to say, okay, Al-Qaeda, what do you want? You know, and just what do you want? You know, if you, basically, here's the thing. If you want this country, say if you want the people of Afghanistan or wherever to have better living conditions, and we offer, you know, a few billion dollars in aid to create the type of environment where people can be independently successful, you know, a businessman, you know, there, then, we can do that. And if we do that, you know, you can stop blowing things up. Is that cool? And so, you know, that would work. And then after that, you know, if there are any Al-Qaeda out there who still just feel like blowing stuff up for the fun of it, then they'd be turned in as criminals. There wouldn't be an organized terrorist organization fighting for the rights of people, because those people's rights would be taken care of. And the other people would just be criminals. And that's really, you know, all that's going on. So the fact is, 9/11 was an inside job. Al-Qaeda was created by the CIA in the early 1980s to basically start-ish with the Russians and fight the Russians in Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and the CIA never lost their phone numbers, still pop up now and then. Every time the U.S. wants to bomb someplace, Al-Qaeda shows up, whether it's Chechnya, if they want to start some stuff there where Russia's busy fighting them, or in the war in Yugoslavia, Al-Qaeda showed up as the Muslims, fighting on behalf of the Muslims there, apparently. Algeria, Al-Qaeda shows up when the U.S. wants stuff there. Yemen, Al-Qaeda's there when the U.S. wants, Indonesia, Al-Qaeda's there. And so, you know, Al-Qaeda's this kind of catch-all, kind of rent-a-thug terrorists, work for the CIA. And there's lots of evidence of this. So, anyway, a little slice of that. So we went from the beginning of the show with Red Beckman. And Red Beckman was... There we go. What? Really? Huh, that's odd. Red Beckman on the Alex Jones radio show. 81-year-old Red Beckman started off talking about the New World Order 50 years. Took you through a bit of that. Also had Mark Faber on there, a German economist, to start off the show, and talking about how Obama and the economic decisions being made right now are disastrous from an economics perspective. And that's the thing, folks. This is all being done by design. You know, all these bad decisions made by people that just happen over and over and over again. These people keep getting worse and worse and worse and worse. You know, this is all being done by design. And so, you know, please do feel free to keep that in mind. It's not absolutely essential, but it's getting more so. So I'm going to flip to the Metro for just a sec here in the last couple of minutes of this show here on the 22nd of February, 2010. It is a Monday. Essential TO, MPP proposing bill that would prevent TTC strikes. Wow. Okay. So they get us hating the TTC last week, taking pictures of a TTC employee sleeping on the job. And then they launch this. And again, this is the cover of the Metro, folks. And when I mean they, I mean the New World Order, people behind the media. This Metro thing, it's mostly anonymous articles. It's kind of put together. It is the world's largest global newspaper out of the Netherlands. And I do have a feeling that its content for our busy culture is designed to change our culture and make changes to our culture of a dishonest nature. So keep an eye out for this. Not saying the bill's good or bad yet, but just saying that this is, you know, the fact that this is being made a priority, and this is on the cover of the Metro after what the heck I went through on this show, is insane. PM in line for reform pension. Almost all the remaining MPs from the old Reform Party will collect more than $100,000 a year in pension benefits once they retire. Wow. $100,000 a year. And these guys are the Reform Party. what was it before? A million? That's reform. You know, what do they think pensions are supposed to be after they reform? Not saying that people when they retire shouldn't have good money, but damn, you know, compared to the rest of the people in the country, they're trying to reform with that, choosing that name and their agendas. That's pretty insane. Group tackles school closings. Community making use of social media as TDSB cites budget concerns. A sea of green Save Our School signs dotted the lawn of Brookview Middle School Thursday night as locals came to speak their mind about closing schools in this Jane Finch neighborhood. Now, folks, all this activism that takes place, the official sort of ways to ask the government for stuff, you can see things getting worse. I mean, do what you can within the system because people need, you know, things right now, and they need issues addressed right now. But understand the system so that you can tackle it from a deeper perspective, because if you don't understand that the budget is not this abstract thing, it's actually controlled by politicians who are shrinking it for use for us while increasing it for use for all sorts of nonsense, including the climate change and global warming based greenwashing going on everywhere. Fido's got green in their ads. Everybody knows which way the wind's blowing, folks. You're going to get nailed in the head with green. I spoke to another police officer on Saturday night after the incident during the day. Very, very nice. But basically, we were just on the street at a corner. He happened to be there, so we started talking to him and talking about the green stuff and what we were up to today. Didn't mention the incident. We just didn't feel like getting into that. But we were just asking about the green stuff, and he said, yeah, you know, it's a little overkill, but, it is probably good to go, you know, green in some ways and so on. So most people will take a sensible position on this, but it's very, very, very dangerous to accept bits and pieces of it. Because then you don't challenge the reason for the whole. Why are they worrying so much about what the weather's going to be like in 20 years if we don't all pay carbon taxes now, if we don't all go green, if we don't all recycle. Why aren't they worrying about GMO foods, lead and mercury being found in our water supply, lead in cosmetics? Again, an article from Yahoo News said a state banned lead in cosmetics. Yahoo News, one state, just some group fought it, and the state banned it. Said you're not allowed to put lead in cosmetics you sell in the state anymore, which is fantastic. But that means, of course, that other states haven't banned it, probably provinces haven't, and so on. So tons of stuff. But that's it for me, folks. A little slice of what they're trying to give us today versus a little slice of what we are getting. Go to TorontoTruthSeekers.com if you do feel like taking action, and if you do feel like, you know, checking out and supporting people that take action. Certainly always appreciated. PressForTruth.ca, a great site. Dan Dixon, Brian Laws, fantastic film, United We Fall, should be coming out. North American Union's not dead, folks. Start looking for signs of the twinning of Canada, America, and Mexico, or thrinning, as it were. Conspiracy Culture, bookstore to Queen Roncesvalles, conspiracyculture.com. Patrick Kadena's great, classy store, Queen and Roncesvalles. Toronto Street News, great paper from Victor Fletcher. There is some hardcore, hot-hitting stuff in there. Hard-hitting stuff in there. Got to check it out. Flip a homeless guy a toonie. It's getting warmer, but hey, we all need to still eat. And finally, for the bigger picture, Infowars.com, definitely recommend it. Naturalnews.com, pass that on to everybody because it is health-related and there are things we can learn there. And finally, internationalforecaster.com and trendsresearch.com, pass that on to people with money. They may come in handy later as we need to fund the info war. But I'm out of here, folks. The People's DJ David James is up next with 4 hours of jazz. Please do stick around for that. Please do have a great February 22nd, 2010. Make today your day to flex for your future in some fashion. Peace out.